Welcome to Course in Miracles. Okay, everybody. Course in Miracles is going to work with use a single word tonight, generosity. And it's going to, again, challenge the ego, challenge the assumed meaning that we have. And in its redefinition of this word, it will also teach and invite you to take up the central lesson of A Course in Miracles. No wasted time, for sure. This little, it's only two paragraphs, you know, this section, this little word. But, you know, I think because the teacher had already made the journey that we have to make, that when he continues to make his opportunities to teach afresh, in case, you know, this is the day when you would hear the message of A Course in Miracles. Again, and that's why again and again and again throughout the book, the more you read it, the more you start to see the redundancy and how it says the same thing over and over again, but in different ways, significantly different ways even. But thank goodness it is a simple message, but a radical change in how we live our lives as egos. So this word generosity, it's a nice sounding word that the ego would welcome, because the ego wants to be nice. If at very least to buy favor from those it wants favor from, you know, the contract, the transaction. So how can I be, I want to be known as generous. Sure I do. What's it going to cost me? You know, so it's an interesting word, generosity, really. But there's a bit to, you know, it goes, I mean, let's jump in, because Jesus does a really cool job. He jumps right into the heart of why we're here. Kenny, you up to reading tonight? Can't hear you. You got control of your mute tonight.
I was going to call you in after my computer. It's a learning process.
Your connection is
so.
Too
you want me poor. To read the? What's that?
Your connection is breaking up. Shucks. Okay, we'll try you again later to see if it clears up later.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Okay. All right, Luann, I got your mute. Go to page 14 of the Manual for Teachers.
Generosity.
Yes.
The term generosity has special meaning to the teacher of God. It is not the usual meaning of the word. In fact, it is a meaning that must be learned and learned very carefully. Like all the other attributes of God's teacher, this one rests ultimately on trust. For without trust, no one can be generous in the true sense. To the world, generosity means giving away, in the sense of giving up. To the teachers of God, it means giving away in order to keep. This has been emphasized throughout the text and the workbook, but is perhaps more alien to the thinking of the world than many other ideas in our curriculum. Its greater strangeness lies merely in the obviousness of its reversal of the world's thinking. In the clearest way possible and at the simplest of levels, the word means the exact opposite to the teachers of God and to the world. Okay, another, as we give, we receive.
You got it. You absolutely got it. Tim, will you give us paragraph two?
The teacher of God is generous out of self-interest. This does not refer, however, to the self of which the world speaks. The teacher of God does not want anything he cannot give away. because he realizes it would be valueless to him by definition. What could he want for? He could only lose because of it. He could not gain. Therefore, he does not seek what only he could keep, because that is a guarantee of loss. He does not want to suffer. Why should he insure himself pain? But he does want to keep for himself all things that are of God, and therefore for his Son. These are things that belong to him. These things he can give away in true generosity, protecting them forever for himself.
Beautiful. Thank you. Those last words he read went by so quickly. Huge amount of information right in there. Sentence 10, but he does want to keep for himself all things that are of God, of oneness, of truth, of eternity. This is of God, which really dismisses oneness, truth, eternity, the things of the world. Which is why we have to enter into a spiritual awakening in order to execute the gifts, to receive the gifts of A Course in Miracles. Seek not to change your world, but change your mind about your world. Healing of your mind. And your mind would then hold or keep or retain or appreciate only the thoughts you think with God. Huge clue right at the end there. But the simple logic is kind of fun to work with. It's to turn the ego on its head. So paragraph 1, the term generosity has special meaning, teacher of God. It's not the usual meaning of the word. In fact, its meaning must be learned very carefully, like all the other attributes of God's teachers. This one rests ultimately on trust. For without trust, no one can be generous in the true sense. You are learning a law of mind in A Course in Miracles that goes directly against the ego. Luann already stated it, so maybe we'll zip through this. But to give and to receive are one in truth. As you give, then you receive. The ego says, I'll give, but conditionally to get when it's a really good idea. When the equation is right and I can gain thereby, I will comfortably give. Yeah, so.
Can I talk about something about this that happened to me today?
Sure.
So I live in a retirement home and they're having a jewelry sale. So everybody who lives here donates all the jewelry they don't want anymore. And it turned out to be really quite a lot of stuff. I was impressed. Hmm. But when I looked through it, I saw something that I gave, that I donated, but I wasn't sure whether I had really wanted to when I was putting everything together. And when I saw it and realized it had not been sold yet, I thought, maybe I should take it back. But they're going to have another sale in a few weeks for what's left, and there's a lot left. But while I was thinking about all the stuff that went through my head during this, I was thinking, how come I'm feeling like giving that away is now a loss?
Mm-hmm.
If I could still use it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel good to think that way.
That's because generosity is so loving. It's to the ego and to the world, generosity is loving. And we have to go even beyond that a little snafu you had there and the guilt that showed up and, you know, a little bit of a spiritual ego maybe even had room to climb in there if you let it. Check out what comes next. because that's a good example for our contrast here. To the teachers of God, okay, so first, to the world, generosity means giving up. To the world, generosity means giving up. You have something, you give it away so others can have what they didn't have. You have less. That's just the way it goes. But maybe you gladly have less because you see the smile on other people's faces, says the world. So that's, feedback for you, showing happiness, spreading around, and you were generous and it was a good thing. You gave one to everybody. You found something for everybody, made everybody happy. They smiled, made you happy. There's no room for guilt there. Wow, it seems really wonderful. But it is giving to something outside of you. This is where it departs from A Course in Miracles. We do not change the world with A Course in Miracles. This is a folly, even to the positive. You can change the world, of course. There's no harm done there, but just recognize what level you're operating. The spiritual work is done inside. Your spiritual awakening is invisible. There will not be words said. There will not be people affected to be any type of proof of your spiritual awakening. It says early in the book, it says miracles used for demonstrations, are the wrong approach. Demonstration would be outward, right? The inward, always the inward. This is where you live. This is where your freedom is. This is where you would awaken and actually experience love inward. You get better at reflecting it outward, and that's good news. You can have a lot of fun, more fun in the world when you stop having fear. So for sure, but it's not the goal. It's not the goal. The inward journey is the goal, the inward freedom to give and to receive something that is invisible inwardly, that has the taste of eternity to it. The taste of universality to it. This helps you, these kind of things, all these 10 words that we're studying, they are invisible, and their application leaves you with the ability to generalize the power of defenselessness, the power of trust, the power of honesty that you experience, the power of tolerance. This allows you to generalize to other people what you thought was different. It helps bring your mind back to accepting the oneness that is there, is here also. So it's a little different than trying to give something away to outside of you. The word taken correctly is not a matter of charity, not what we're discussing here, but an internal gift of trust in the big picture. How big? Really big. You're actually going to see your brother's interests as your own. Even though that SOB needs to go to jail, or even though there's somebody that you swore you'd never talk to again because it just makes you too upset. This happens. But that doesn't change your ability to be generous, as A Course in Miracles is teaching in this paragraph, even though you're never going to talk to that SOB again, right? You have to see through appearances. You have to see through what the world is showing you as differences that are insurmountable. This is what makes the illusion work as the illusion. And it works great. Good job. You did great. But it's not what we're learning with A Course in Miracles. We're learning to see past the differences and find the sameness, and you will find it in you, and you will extend it to the other. It's all invisible. It's all in your mind. But it allows a joining that leads to an eternal relationship. Let's read more. To the teachers of God, It means giving away in order to keep. Of course, the ego you give away, you don't have anymore. You exchange it for something else. Good reputation, happiness in the other people. Sure, lovely. Not what we're talking about. We're actually talking about giving away, in your mind, attributes of truth to the other, seeing past the differences, finding the sameness, and joining with it. This is the generosity that you must gain and share and double up and grow in all your relationships. First is, of course, your mind. So, and then it's kind of redundant, you know, from here. So I think we got the picture. We can kind of skip that. Let's go take a quick peek, just as a matter of rehearsal, to lesson 108. So turn to workbook page 195, lesson 108. And let's just be reminded of what that lesson looked like before we dig into the paragraph 2 in our manual for teachers. And Jacqueline, I got your mute. When you get there, would you please start that lesson for us?
Okay. To give and to receive are one in truth. Vision depends upon today's idea. The light is in it, for it reconciles all seeming opposites.
Jacqueline, would you please teach the group what is vision in A Course in Miracles? And you don't have to be complete about it. Just give us one thought that pops in your head.
Well, it's something that happens in my mind, not with my eyes.
Yes. Yes.
And it's an experience.
It's an experience. Yes. Anybody else? What's a vision in A Course in Miracles? Anybody else want to add something before we... Because look at that. It starts the lesson and then moves on. But oh my God, what an invitation to receive one of the biggest tools that's not available to those who are material-based.
Well, this is true vision.
It's true vision.
I mean, it says, we're saying what is vision, but what we're talking about is true vision. Yeah, I just wanted to.
Right. Course in Miracles uses this word very specifically as opposed to what the body's eyes see. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lynn. You can jump back in too when you think of something.
I always have to relate it to love because that's where I'm coming from.
Okay.
So I think vision is when you are seeing things, when you are seeing things through love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Versus?
Versus through projection.
Yeah. Yeah. Projection. Judgment. Analysis. Yeah, you bet. Those are all the other side. Those are all sight and measuring and contractual. Vision goes beyond such limits. Indeed. It's a wonderful thing to have a handle on vision. Anybody want to say anything else? But yes, please, Tim.
Vision as the first word here, as Luann described it, is not perception, beyond perception.
Yes.
So it reconciles all seeming opposites. Well, perception requires opposites or at least differences.
Yes.
In order for it to be perception.
Excellent. Yes. Yes. Vision has a feeling to it that is an understanding. Kind of goes beyond the perception, indeed. So important is this word in A Course in Miracles, vision. Yeah, good, good. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay. Also, I was thinking that vision, the core of vision is one, you're knowing oneness.
Wow, yes.
I would think, I mean, that's the experience, the understanding you gain. That's my thought.
Yes, vision comes from a different vector or source or parent thought than perception. And it is that oneness awareness. This comes up tonight. So I'll just throw it in now a little bit. Because you brought it up, Jacqueline. The acceptance in your mind as true, this oneness nature of truth, the shared keyword now, shared, shared. What you share, invisible things that are eternal that you share. This is what allows people of different walks and economic backgrounds and political backgrounds and vegetarian and not to get together and talk about spiritual stuff. Because they're going beyond the visible differences to what we all share because of our source. Same thing happens with scientists. Scientists can quickly dismiss the surface differences when they dig in and start getting down to chemistry, for example. You can have somebody who's studying something completely different you've never even thought about, but let's talk about what it's made of, the chemical makeup. And now the scientists converge very quickly, right? You talk about, well, is there a benzene ring? Well, yes, by chance there is. Well, what about the benzene ring? And off they go in talking very, very closely together about two very disparate things. Vision allows us to join our minds. That's why we don't talk politics in this meeting, and we don't talk other religions, which are all very interesting, and they have a lot of really good self-help type of phrases and catchphrases, and I've got 100 of them myself that I just love. The effort of the mind to think about God and think about love and truth and we have to somehow get past all those different ideas and somehow get our minds converged. And this vision one, forgiveness is another one that starts out very slippery because, of course, it's not say so fast that you could throw it out what forgiveness means. And you know that because every time we go around the class, what does forgiveness mean? You get people all over the map. But it does converge the more you study the book to a very simple concept. Once you're really to own it and let go of all of the other nice ideas about forgiveness, the course's teaching becomes a very simple tool. All right. So, vision. Okay, Jacqueline, please start over and continue. And somebody had their hand up? Does somebody have their hand up? I miss it? No. Okay, go ahead.
Vision depends upon today's idea. Well, the idea to give and to receive are one in truth.
Thank you.
Vision depends upon today's idea. The light is in it, for it reconciles all seeming opposites. And what is light except the resolution, born of peace, of all your conflicts and mistaken thoughts into one concept, which is wholly true? Even that one will disappear, because the thought behind it will appear instead to take its place. That's a big T thought.
Yes.
And now you are at peace forever, for the dream is over then.
For the dream is over, when that capital T thought. Look at Jesus dancing with words to talk about enlightenment. And so this would be transcendence. You would transcend the character in the dream. Your awareness would rise past the limits of being a separate character. Wow! Holy cannoli.
So the thought is peace?
It starts with peace, yes.
I mean, I'm looking
But the thought is certainly a peaceful thought. And that's where your first year in A Course in Miracles takes you. And it's a gift of a lifetime that you could actually choose peace instead of chaos. So your first reading through, that's right. It may be peace, but not subsequent readings through that capital T thought. Isn't it nice how singular that is? You'll see that again in tonight's reading, this singular thought. Remember I say you're one thought away? You're one thought away.
Well,
peace is not enough. I'm just going to tell you, peace is not enough.
No, I know, but so I'm just wondering, what would you say about God?
Good, good, good.
I'm God, source.
Yeah, good.
Oneness.
Oneness. Yes.
Oneness.
An absolute thought of oneness.
Yeah.
An absolute thought of oneness. From that absolute thought of oneness comes the experience of oneness, which would extinguish the remaining value of two-ness. Doesn't mean you can't entertain the idea of two-ness, but it's no longer true, see? Nothing to be afraid of. But something definitely to be embraced, even anticipated. Because you can think of oneness in your separated perspective. You're smart enough, and that's what keeps you going, I think. I can speak for all of us. Every time you have a meditation where you go from two-ness or multiplicity or duality to a thought of unity or oneness, you get a little buzz because of the potency of the truth, of the light entering the dream. Keeps you going. You can appreciate, think of oneness. That one thought that we're talking about here, the capital T, is a grokking, you know, complete absorbing and not only understanding, because readiness is not mastery, but a knowing. Do you see? One thought? Good, good. And now you are at peace forever. Comma. For the dream is over then. Wow, he just summarized what's going to happen. Love it. Ross, would you give us paragraph 2?
Unmuted. True light that makes true vision possible is not the light the body's eyes behold. It is a state of mind that has become so unified that darkness cannot be perceived at all. And thus, what is the same is seen as one, while what is not the same remains unnoticed, for it is not there.
I can't say a word. That is a perfectly stated, how clear can you get? Thank you, Ross. Jason, you reading tonight? I imagine you're not.
Before you go any further, I hit the button, and I can hear fine, but I don't see the pictures at all. What do I need to do to get back?
What type of device are you on?
I'm on a Apple computer.
Okay, then you take your mouse and Apple.
An iMac.
And what do you see?
Well, right now I see just my list of, I see the invitation to the meeting.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, go to the bottom of the screen. Move your mouse to the bottom of the screen and a bunch of icons show up and click on the Zoom icon.
The Zoom icon.
Which is a little camera, movie camera.
Oh, way over there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'm nice and dark. What happened?
You broke something.
I think I'm just going to leave it.
If your light timed out or something.
No, I didn't do anything. I'm just going to leave it because I don't need to see myself. I'd rather.
Yeah, we can kind of see you. It's kind of dramatic. You know, it's kind of film noir.
I can see all of you just the way you were before, but I can't see myself very well.
It's funny that happened the exact same moment you touched it. It's completely unrelated to you changing your Zoom screen.
Oh.
Wow. You know what? Let's read that paragraph again so Ross can hear it. Kenny, you want to try reading? Why don't you check on your connection? You got to give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down because I can't control your mute tonight.
So, can you hear me?
I have to say no.
I can.
Okay, thanks for trying. Okay. All right. So, Tim, I got your mute. If you would read for us again, paragraph 2, and Ross can soak it in.
For you, Ross. True light that makes true vision possible is not the light the body's eyes behold. It is a state of mind that has become so unified that darkness cannot be perceived at all. And thus what is the same as seen as one, while that is not the same, or while what is not the same, remains unnoticed, for it's not there.
Imagine the peace on your face as you only see what's the same in everything that appears and occurs because you understand oneness and it had become the truth. And anything that competes with this peaceful oneness, you know is not true and not even seen the differences. Wow. Yeah, wow. I just love that paragraph. I mean, homie, goodness. Wonderful. Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you give us paragraph 3?
This is the light that shows no opposites, and vision, being healed, has power to heal. This is the light that brings your peace of mind to other minds, to share it and be glad that they are one with you and with themselves. This is the light that heals because it brings single perception based upon one frame of reference.
Woo! Look at him go! Wordsmith!
Based upon one frame of reference from which one meaning comes.
Wow! Man, this is so well worded, Tim.
He uses the word perception in the last sentence.
Yes. Yes.
Single perception.
Yes.
Which, if I understand, is not perception at all any longer.
Well, it's what the Course calls right perception. You and the real world comes in a last perception.
So this is the lawns of heaven, if you will.
The lawns of heaven. The crossing over point.
Yeah.
Where the contrast is seen one last time with a laugh.
And then this is the point at which God himself comes down and makes the final step with us.
This is how God takes the final step. Because you accept your godliness with your own mind. You accept the right perception. That is God. You, keyword now, you have an experience of oneness. And you forgive perception, meaning release it. That is God taking the last step. You actually allow God to see through your eyes, so to speak. You finally let God in. God, you're not waiting for God to do something. You surrender to the truth, and that is God, right? The truth is God. That's God taking the final step. You're not lucky. You're not accomplished. It's not complex. You simply surrender duality.
It's hard for me to imagine a state of mind without duality, without perception.
Should be.
And yet, somehow I know that it's so.
You know. Ah, yes. That's that. What I've been trying to call a different type of feeling this year. I lose the words, but I know. But I lose the words to describe. But I know. This is what a spiritual awakening is, because it is a journey beyond words. But key word now, God, can I think of this reference? I'll just tell you, the word experience is critical here. Your experience of this wordless, undefinable, beyond words thing, that experience is of God. In fact, and this is a quote from the book that I think I could pull out if I stewed on it for a minute, but it is, all experience is of God. Think about that for a minute. Take a moment and think of what experience is. Is experience visible?
Not to
it's really personal. Yeah. Who knows whether you experienced it or not? Only you can say. And as soon as you start to say it, you start to dilute the experience as you put it into discrete words, etc., making the experience smaller, smaller as you go. And then you start to redefine and put it in the past and make it a memory. The experience itself, though, that is of God. That is living, which is why it's of God. Not the experience of anything in particular. Just that movement of mind we call experience. This is a gift of God. It's a gift of life. So when you allow the healing, keyword, healing experience of the thought of God oneness to become your only truth. Then your final perception, you can see the dream as a dream. You can see the world as a mind exercise and not as a place. Hold your finger here, and we're going to flip, and I'm going to look at one short little sentence on page 28. Flip back to 28. Just for a second. Jesus knows he's got his work cut out for him, and he starts off really early, what's chapter 2. And he puts this wonderful circle in there at the end of those italics on chapter 2 on page 28. Those italics there. that wonderful prayer, I'm here only to be truly helpful. Look at the last sentence. I will be healed. As I let the capital letters, which means sanity, Holy Spirit, the translator of all things that would seem to be conflicting or different or harmful or useless, the Holy Spirit, as I let him teach me to heal. The Course in Miracles uses the word sickness quite a bit. Sickness does get manifested into the physical form, and it all represents the error of differences. The healing we're talking about tonight is that thought would come to you, that thought of oneness would come to you. And that is an awakening. That is a movement of mind, and keyword now, an experience. Experience that allows you to dismiss the dream of separation. You don't, your eyes still function if you choose to keep them, but they're no longer believed to be reporting the truth. My spiritual awakening, a transcendent experience. God taking the last step means you would abandon the whole thing for all the value and any reality that it would have for you. So, it's a big deal. Okay. Back to, yep.
I have something that just, I'll keep it brief. This morning and today, I've really been acutely aware of not being my own body. It's not that I'm not. It's not that it's not my idea. But I see it as a thought form and not my... I identify with it less and less. And that was triggered at least in part because one of my best friends was riding his e-bike home after dark and he got hit by a car. He didn't survive surgery. And I found out about it this morning, and that will jostle you some.
Yes. Sobering, I call it.
Yeah.
And death is so sobering.
Yeah. I went to a place of darkness, and then I began to look at that and say, how would Jesus see this? How would my teacher have me see this?
Yeah.
Instead. And so now I've begun to speak in terms of the gifts that he gave all the people around him. He was a very generous soul.
Yeah. Beautiful extension of living, beautiful extension of life is living, whatever days he had. And you experience some of it. Very good. But it's so sobering for you. What does it mean for you? You're still kicking around. Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
No, thank you. Thanks for mentioning that. Good, good. Okay. Did we finish paragraph 3 on that lesson? We did? Okay. So now, paragraph 4. And I think we're back to Ross. Ross, I got your mute. Would you give us paragraph 4?
4. Lesson 108.
Yes, sir.
Here are both giving and receiving seen as different aspects of one thought whose truth does not depend on which is seen as first, nor which appears to be in second place. Here it is understood that both occur together, that the thought remain complete. And in this understanding is the base on which all opposites are reconciled, because they are perceived from the same frame of reference which unifies this thought.
Yes, that's the metaphysics of what we're talking about. What is this? How does this thought work that way? Here are both giving and receiving seen as different aspects of one thought whose truth does not depend on which is seen as first nor which appears to be second place. Yeah, that's the mechanics of it. But this thought, you might say, is sharing. Not the sharing of the world. The sharing of the sameness. The sharing of mind. The sharing of being. You one facet, and what you're looking at another facet that is exactly equal, even though it looks different. Yes, Ross.
I like that word, aspects.
Nice.
Because what we read in A Course in Miracles is that everything, including the Ross character, is a thought in the one mind. So the Ross character is an aspect of the one thought. And it's just a nice word to me, that aspects word, because you can just put that onto everything. The Ross character, all the characters, all the planets and the universe, it's an aspect of one thought whose truth does not depend on which is seen first. So I just like that word.
I had this meditation where I was working over this topic, and what came to me was that we are each an aspect of the oneness,
like it.
A jewel. You cut a diamond, you know, before you cut a diamond, it's just a rock. It could be any chunk of quartz. You know, you just might even toss it aside. But as soon as you put you chip this crystalline structure and a clean face shows up, it begins to collect light, and the light shines to the inside of the diamond. A second facet is cut, a third, fourth, and the diamond is completed when there are many facets, each now reduced. Now the rough faces are gone, and each facet is selected or complete or presented, if you will. So now you imagine a diamond with all of its facets or aspects on it. Each of those faces outward, away from the diamond. This is you in your separate state. You are an aspect of the diamond, an aspect of God. And you're looking away from God. There's no diamond to see, even though you are the diamond. Instead, you see from your facet, which is a different plane than any other plane in the diamond, right? Each plane is slightly different degrees. There's no two. They do not share the same plane. So you're this one plane, and you own that perspective, and you're looking out. If you look to the side, you cannot see another facet. This would break the diamond's brilliance. The diamond is cut with those facets so that the light enters from one facet and it shines out all of the other facets. The light from any one facet, when it goes inward, shines equally throughout all the others. Vice versa, when the light enters any part of the diamond, it comes in, and because of the way diamonds are designed, guess why they're so brilliant and sparkly? The light exits all the other facets. And so here you are, an aspect of God, an aspect of the one diamond, of the oneness, looking out. And A Course in Miracles says, you know, hey, the teaching of God, of the Holy Spirit, is 180 degrees opposite of what the ego is doing. That means you don't turn 5 degrees or 10 degrees. You turn completely the other way. See? Now you're the facet looking out, seeing the darkness or whatever it is you've imagined. And you turn around, completely turn around, and you're the diamond, see? You're looking into the diamond now, aren't you? Now you're seeing the oneness. Remember, the light entering the diamond hits all other facets. So now your vision, looking inward for the first time, you see every other facet is now instantly available to you. Your light, of course, is given away equally. I think this is how it is. You are a facet. You've been looking out into the darkness, and the Course in Miracles says, hey, look the other way. It's really great. Yeah, I like that too, Ross. That word aspect is so generous of him to acknowledge and allow us to keep some shred of individuality, if not a lot. Yes, Jacqueline.
Well, that's, you know, one of the scary, you know, the scariest parts is in the final, top of the run, Teachers of God, you've released or it's disappeared, your individual, somehow that has disappeared, right? Or you finally surrendered to. And you have to, I suspect you have to truly surrender that, even if we're still an aspect, we still have some, I don't know, do we have an awareness of being an aspect? Who knows what it is, right? So what you're saying is, sounds beautiful, but my understanding is you have to totally give it up completely.
And it is,
and trust it.
Trust is huge.
So that's you know, where the fear, you know, I've touched on that fear and other people have shared. Yeah, we have that fear. So anyway, just my comment.
Do you ever do any advanced mathematics in your schooling?
No. I mean, you know, algebra.
Okay, algebra. Yeah.
Geometry. But it's been a long time, so whatever.
Right.
No physics, are you talking about physics and things like that?
But with mathematics, when you start to work the rules of math that are presented to you, there's a big jumble of terms and things. You wonder, what am I doing? What the heck am I doing? But then if it's a good teacher and a good class and you start applying these rules of mathematics, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And you can actually find dimensions and the math, the numbers and everything that was just a hassle to work with. They take on a meaning for their use. And you no longer fight with the difficulty of the math, even though you may choose to abandon the math because it gets more and more difficult as you go along. I eventually got booted out. It was like, what? This is going way too far. But on the way there, I going through calculus and stuff, I just saw, wow, look at the way I can, you know, I can find even something as strange as this rock. You know, there's a formula that'll give me the exact displacement of this really strange shape. It helps me abandon the uselessness without math, without calculus. And I said, tell me how many cubic centimeters is this precisely, Jacqueline or Andrew? I would say, what? I don't know. I have to do some displacement test. So this kind of realization or awakening to the simplicity of oneness kind of happens like when you accept that, you know, like multiplication, when you were really young, multiplication made no sense at all. I mean, it was like impossible. But then, you know, you got 2 + 2, you got that as 4. And then 3 × 2 is not 5. Why not? But then you got it, that multiplication is something different, and you accepted it and began to use it. It was kind of fun. I venture to say, you got through algebra. It's kind of fun. It appeals to your sense of creativity, this power of God. And in the world, you do not create. You just discover what's already been done. So when you ask what it's like, am I going to let go entirely, was what you... the challenge you put before us. It is like moving up through mathematics, and you let go of what once was secure say addition only. Do only addition. Once you learn multiplication, you are allowed to let addition go as being the only thing you could do or should do or needed. Because now you can multiply. It's more power. It's interesting. What else can I do? The same thing with music. If you advance in music, it just flows. This power. Or cooking. When you learn to cook more and more, the techniques and stuff give you more capability. And the early things you hung on to, you release for too easy and known. This is what will happen to you. This is the kind of experience you will have as you release the idea of being a body and small in a body, because your mind will start to return to the freedom of abstraction and creativity. Yes, Ross.
So I probably have mentioned this before, but there's a book called Flatland. And the concept is, Their whole civilization lives on a piece of paper. There's no third dimension. So I liken it to that. Mm. In other words, when they see this paperclip going through their world, they don't see that third dimension. They only see a hole appearing. And then when the paperclip passes through, well, okay, you know, now what's happened? Well, there's a bigger hole or whatever. But in other words, they can't conceive of that third dimension.
Yes, very good.
So that's how I like it. What you're saying is that we can't conceive of a dimension where there is no time and no space, where there are no bodies, where we are just spirit and existing in that realm, in that, if you will, in that godlike, the Son of God realm. We just can't conceive of it. You can experience it. A universal experience is necessary. That's the experience that we, achieve, let's say, when we have revelation. We're going to be communicating directly with God. I don't know, maybe some people in this room have had that and know that, oh, yeah, I can't describe it, but, yeah, there is this experience. It's like, you know, and the other common one is as a fish. You know, a fish doesn't know water. It lives in water. So we live in time and space, but we can't conceive of what it would be like not to have time and space. That just is. Well, no, it's not. That's not true at all. There is this other dimension where, oh, Tim's got the book up on the screen if anyone wants to find out how limited flatlanders are with that one-dimensional paper world.
That's a
but anyway, I thought that
thank you.
Might help.
That you're
kind of, oh, yeah. So it's just something we can't conceive of because we're using five senses and a brain.
Yes. Excellent. And we're just so busy with our two-dimensional perception and we're satisfied with it even.
Or three-dimensional.
Well, if you're a flatlander, you're two-dimensional.
Yeah, well, then.
I like that. And the paperclip passes through is just dots.
Right.
It just dots. One dot, three dots, two to one dot again, gone.
Yeah.
Could not perceive the three dimensions of the paperclip. Excellent. Thank you, Ross. You really brought that home. Jacqueline.
Well, I'm talking about the fear and the total surrender. Of course we don't know. I mean, we get some glimpses. We have some holy answers. We have revelations. But to really truly surrender and let go is one of our final things that we do, I would say. Maybe we do it slowly, a little bit here, a little bit there, but it's got to be all or nothing at some point. And so not knowing, of course, there's the fear. And also, it's not just the body, of course. You said the body, but it's this self.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be me. I mean, it's just everything. Well, of course, it's the whole world. It's everything.
Yeah, the whole world and the universe and the next lifetime.
Yeah. All the lifetimes, everything. I mean, all concepts, all ideas, all feelings, anyway. Anyway, that's just
so that. I think you need a miracle.
Yes, totally. But it is a surrender. Whatever this is.
It's a surrender.
Has to totally, you know.
But.
Fear has to be probably healed or released or something. That's part of the journey of the guilt and the fear. It's a deep, deep fear, deep subconscious guilt and fear.
It is a surrender of what is not true. A surrender of what is true, you will never do. If you think, if you still hold on to that there's something of value in this domain and dimension, you will continue to support it, even to build it. You can't function in this world without regarding the world and feeding yourself and taking care of the details. But you are not a body. You awaken into another identity, if even only for an instant here and an instant there. There are out of pattern time intervals. We call the holy instant. Each of these slowly, if not quickly, brings you to the awareness of the beyond or of the eternal. And it, when the light has come, this is what it means. This is the understanding of this other type of existence. The light comes as literally as the lightness of being. In my experience, that's why I like the word enlightenment, because it lightens everything up. There is a shift in perception about what I am. And the draw or the sexiness of the world, I still understand what's sexy and interesting about the world, but I don't feel it as much because something is awoken here that is so far beyond it. It's so much more satisfying and interesting. And I think this is what happens. And as you advance, you don't have the fear of letting go of your addition tables. Because, man, you're into multiplication. You're into division. You're into higher math that is crazy fun. It's wild things. And you assume that the addition stuff is just too small now for you. When you were in first grade, it was everything, you know, as far as math goes. Luann.
I have experienced a moment of only knowing love. And it was like I was looking at a white screen or light, and there was only love flowing through me and all around me. And in response to what Jacqueline was saying, it only lasted a moment, but it seems to me like maybe it has to do with your math example. I could probably put that in there, but it's kind of like the word trust is so important. It feels like when I'm afraid, like Jacqueline was saying, happens sometimes, and I have had that. I feel like I'm going to lose myself, even if I completely know what all that white light love was all about, I would feel like I would lose myself. And if I lost myself, then what am I? I mean, living is, I can understand living, but I can't understand living without, I don't know, without me.
Without you.
Without me, exactly.
Without your individual loves and hates and cares and memories. You can't imagine it.
So let me ask you a question about your diamond thing, which is kind of related.
Uh-huh.
The sliver of diamond that I am, let's say. Mm-hmm. And when I look back into the rest of the diamond, it's all there. And the diamond is God. But when I think about it, if I were all by myself as that little sliver, I would still have all the aspects of God. But how can that be different than all the rest of them? Because they all have the aspects of God.
So, very good.
So it still feels like I'd be losing any thing that was not, that was me.
All you have to do is turn back around into the darkness and you can have your world back.
Is the world that I would have back this world that, well, I don't even know if I want this world back. I was doing lesson 12 today and I started crying because as I looked around, I realized it was all meaningless, and it was meaningless in a sad, fearful, no meaning at all way.
There is the dark night of the soul thoughts where you see the meaninglessness of the world, the hopelessness of the world even. And you say, I must go forward now because the world no longer holds hope for me for purpose, happiness, completion, and understanding. If there was no fear around that thought, but a sadness or a inevitableness, this is good. If there's fear and depression, then it's not the dark night of the soul.
Well, what I wanted to do is what I normally do when I'm feeling love, which is cry. I felt like the meaningless meant that there is no love in this world.
Yes. It's a passage you must go through in your awakening. Part of letting go of the habits of the world. It becomes obvious that there's no actual love in this world. Everybody is so selfish, including me. So small-minded.
I think you talked to Tim about this one time, and I didn't quite get it, but at that time But I'm sitting here remembering having done this, and what I see when I look out my window are a bunch of tents of people living along the Guadalupe River because they don't have anything. And that is so. And then you hear about Ukraine, and then you hear about, I don't even listen to the news, but I hear about it anyway from all the people that I live around. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing of this earth, if I think about it in truth, that I really, really want. Even the people that my family, I love them, but I don't get a sense of unconditional love. They can turn me off just as fast as they turn me on.
Because just like you turn them off as fast as you turn them on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It just feels like it's inevitable that we're not going to have anything but loss.
And you share that with all other egos. Chapter 16 says the ego knows only one thing. It knows what it doesn't want. It has no positive goals at all, but it does know what it doesn't want, and it lives from that perspective, which makes a pretty ugly world when you get really honest about it. But your heart is calling out for sharing. Your heart is calling out for oneness. Your heart is calling out for this power that actually brings all things together in their sameness.
Yes, it is. And I had an instant of that. But I had to ask the Holy Spirit to do it for me because I couldn't do it myself.
Yes. Absolutely. You have to abandon Luann and you have to abandon the small perspective of your ego and body in order, the Course calls it step out of the insane thought system. That's a quote. You have to step out of an insane thought system in order to see how insane it is. That's what happens in a holy instant where you just accept the vastness of your spirit. Your ego is not vast. Your ego is very selfish and small, and it needs to be taken care of. And it has preferences, and it gets cranky and uncomfortable and worried, etc. Your spirit, those holy instances that you've had, are moments of vastness you can't confuse with the ego. And ultimately, you can't help it. You will be drawn to the vastness because this is your home. You will be drawn back home to the vastness.
I think that's what I'm calling scary. Because this little individual self I can kind of get.
Yeah.
Vastness I cannot get.
Hopefully it's only scary because you feel, you know, it's inevitable and it's where you're going. And that's okay. Not really fear. It might be growing pains. Ross, what do you got?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I've been, this is what's on my mind, and maybe it's applicable, maybe it's not. But my mom's kind of in failing health. So I've been going over there. You know, she asked me to come down, and, you know, there's really nothing I can do. I mean, she can't get up out of a chair. She's feeling dizzy. You know, all these things. She's 90 years old, and she's just having health problems. And, you know, I realized that there's really nothing I can do. I went down there and washed some windows and helped her to the bathroom and stuff. And, you know, I took 2 days off work yesterday and today. But, you know, the course is what's helping me get through this because I feel so helpless. But what from the course is she's calling for love. So what do? I send the Ross character down there. And that's my way of showing love. I'm not doing anything. I'm not solving any problems. I'm not, you know, I washed a couple of windows and helped him cook food and took my mom to the bathroom. But there's nothing I can do. She's, you know, eventually she may have to decide what she said to me was she wants to die in the house that, you know, I grew up in and all that. 50 years she's been there. But, she may have to go into assisted living, but she's going to have to decide that. The only thing I can do is go down there and do what the course says, which is,
you know what?
The call for love, and however the Ross character can show it, give her love.
And choose peace. Even if things get chaotic, and they may, as she gets needing assisted living, you do not lose your peace.
Well, good luck, but...
Well, I'm just telling you, that's
I'll try and I'll get it back if I lose it.
Okay, good. Quick.
I mean, the thing that really got me was when she, you know, seemed really sad and was like, oh, yeah, I'd really like to have a cat, but I know I can't, I'm too old to take care of it. So that was like, ouch!
Ouch! Ouch! Yes.
Because she's right, but ouch!
Yes.
I want to give her a cat, but it's not a good idea.
You bet.
And
her ego's lamenting that not able, the fact that you felt that, this is a gift on perspective of your life. Just like Tim got a perspective on his life when his friend didn't make it through surgery.
Yeah.
That hurt.
Well, anyway, well, I wanted to share that at some moment that seemed appropriate, and I don't know, maybe it is.
Thank you. You bet. Luann, what do you got?
My mother never ever told me she loved me until a day or so when she was lying in bed helpless at 97 years old, and then she said, I love you, baby, or I love you, Luann. I felt at that moment that she actually did. And that at that moment, it was, in spite of who I am. So if I were going to say to anybody who's living with, who's trying to help somebody who's dying get what they want, I don't think you have to do anything. I think you just have to know that they are wanting unconditional love and that you're going to be giving it to them as best you can. And it's not a love that has to do anything.
That's just, it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Luann, I agree.
That's what the course has helped me to come to terms with, is that there's nothing I can do, and there's nothing that needs to be done.
Yes, and you aren't going to do anything for her.
Right.
But you can give her love.
Except be loving, and then she can pick it up and take it or leave it. And it sounds like Luann's mother picked it up. In a great moment. Tim.
I remember being taught about hospice care, the greatest and truly only gift you can give another person somebody going through the dying process or not, is simply your presence. Unjudgmental, fully attentive, silent.
Not fearful.
Not fearful. Present. You know, you are there with them.
Yes.
And you don't have a cat. You don't have an answer to their problem about needing to go to a home. You don't have an answer to my friend's family who are grieving.
That's right.
But what I did today was for them was just to be present and to listen with my full attention. After I did that and I came back home is when I began to feel a sense of peace about the whole affair for the first time.
But let me offer that your silence, but your presence there, allowed for experience to occur. Had you come in with a bunch of Wikipedia articles about death or hospital stays or whatever else you might have discussed, the e-bikes, I don't know what else could have possibly, or some religious thing, the experience of what's actually happening would have been pushed out. As we're describing here, just your presence, honest presence, which often is, there's nothing I don't know. But this gets the ego's analysis and answers out of the way, and experience gets elevated and received. So I love how you described that, Tim, and that you got home and you really felt the experience, you felt you did something, you felt the presence was valuable. And it isn't because you said something clever.
The sense of peace that sent it surprised me. I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah. Sobriety feels good too, by the way. Death is very sobering. You're such a busy life, worrying and thinking about all your little stuff. Well, death has a way of just pushing that all aside for a little while. Jason had that experience when his mother died. He tells us a story of it was lasted for like 2 days, 2 or 3 days. And it just, his whole life was just reset. He didn't even choose it. It just, the soberness of the death had a way of clarifying his mind and he felt really alive. Okay. Let's pick up paragraph 5 while we have time, and that's going to be Jacqueline. I got your mute.
Okay. On 195, the lesson 108.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. One thought completely unified will serve to unify all thought. This is the same as saying one correction will suffice for all correction. Or that to forgive one brother wholly is enough to bring salvation to all minds. For these are but some special cases of one law which holds for every kind of learning if it be directed by the one who knows the truth.
I will be healed as I let him teach me to heal. And there is one thought with a capital T that is the healing. And maybe you're too timid to take that one thought as everything, but eventually you will. But isn't that great how absolute this is? One thought completely unified will serve to unify all thought. That's potent. That's really potent. And simple. Wonderfully simple. It's the kind of thing that makes you keep reading the book. Luann, would you read for us the next paragraph? I got your mute.
To learn that giving and receiving are the same has special usefulness because it can be tried so easily and seen as true. And when this special case has proved it always works in every circumstance where it is tried, the thought behind it can be generalized to other areas of doubt and double vision. And from there, it will extend and finally arrive at the one thought which underlies them all.
Wow. It's got to get your blood going.
We got to try and try and try.
Yeah. And then we're just going to read one more paragraph because it's Tim. Would you read that number 7 for us?
Today we practice with the special case of giving and receiving. We will use this simple lesson in the obvious because it has results we cannot miss. To give is to receive. Today we will attempt to offer peace to everyone and see how quickly peace returns to us. Light is tranquility, and in that peace is vision given us, and we can see.
And we can see. Oh, these lessons are priceless. Jesus taking your hand and offering you a day-long meditation of healing. Oh, don't miss the workbook. Do it over and over and over again. In the interest of time, we're going to skip to the back of the book and pick up our second paragraph on page 14, because now it'll make a lot of sense after all the work we've just done. So 14 in the manual for teachers, and Ross is up when he gets there. I got your mute, Ross. Give us paragraph 2 on page 14.
Uh-oh. Okay. My book's falling apart, so. There we go. What are we doing?
Paragraph 2 on Manual for Teachers, page 14.
Okay, got it. The teacher of God is generous out of self-interest. This does not refer, however, to the self of which the world speaks. The teacher of God does not want anything he cannot give away because he realizes it would be valueless to him by definition. What would he want it for? He could only lose because of it. He could not gain. Therefore, he does not seek what only he could keep, because that is a guarantee of loss. He does not want to suffer. Why should he insure himself pain? But he does want to keep for himself all things that are of God, and therefore for his Son. These are the things that belong to him. These he can give away in true generosity, protecting them forever for himself.
The only way you can keep what is valuable is to release the valueless as nothing. This will happen with your spiritual awakening. And Jacqueline, you had the perfect question, which was, you know, a little fear pops up. Does I have to force myself to let go of things that are valuable? No. Not at all. That would bring uncomfortableness or fear or a chance of sacrifice. You'd be letting go of a little value to get a bigger value. No. You're letting go of no value. And be patient, because you are in the hands of the Holy Spirit. And your awakening, where you honestly see and separate easily the valuable from the valueless, is happening. By all means, meditate on that thought and look for the fear. And then have the Holy Spirit walk you through it and redefine what it is you are perceiving up to vision. If it has enough strength to bring you fear, it's worth asking the Holy Spirit to help you shift your perception and have a miracle about what appears to be valuable in this world. It's obviously, if it's bringing fear, it's bringing you down and making you feel small or vulnerable. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. And there's the peace of God that will help you dance right out of the dream. Yes, Ross.
I was just considering the difference between letting go and surrendering. And it's like there's a subtle difference, because you let go of the world and you surrender to
what's real, kind of like that. Let go of the world and surrender to what's real. Something like that, huh?
Yeah, there's a little subtleness there that is actually a matter of freedom. Mm-hmm. Whichever of those words that you decide to go with that brings a sense of peace and freedom for being true, for being free, for bringing you what you, well, the true word is inheritance, for bringing you the truth of what you are. This is not true. This world and its smallness where you can't actually love. Did you know that? You can't actually love here. There's thoughts, there's reflections, there's attempts, but they're all, you're way too loaded with fear and condition to be called love. You can't actually share. Your little self is always looking out for loss. This is not a condition of love. Here with these bodies. Now, yeah, I know you can get very sweet and have some fun trying, but eventually you see that the true love is a bigger picture experience. And it's all around you. It's not like it's hidden from you. It's everywhere, but it's not what your ego thinks it is. And that's what I think keeps you going for your spiritual awakening. So you can have that perspective and then more. Yeah. And embrace everything that you appears to be here from a true perspective. And it's a lot more fun. Yeah. Thank you everybody for studying Course in Miracles with me. And this generosity that you would take up, essentially it's sharing your true nature with all others, with every other living thing that appears to be different. You share the most essential nature with it, the same nature, the highest nature that you can think of for yourself, so also shares with another. And that's when you're generous. So thank you everybody. Have a great week. We'll do it again next week. Good to see you all.
Thank you, Andrew. Bye, everybody.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, y'all.
Goodbye, everybody. Bye.